When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, babies, if you want a little extra bonus content from us, you can head on over to patreon.com/totalreboot. And for just $5 a month, you get access to an entire new spin-off podcast from me and Cameron called Total Reboot Riffs, where we pitch our ideas for what we think the classic films of cinema should be remade as. And also, we've just started a new thing called the Mike Myers Commentary Collection, where we'll be watching Mike Myers films and recording commentaries for them live. The first one is out right now. It's for Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery. So if you want to hear those, you can head on over to patreon.com/totalreboot and sign on up. Also, if you want to hear us and see us do a commentary for a movie live, you can see us do just that on August 10th. That's a Friday night at 9 p.m. in Sydney at the Golden Age Cinema. We will be doing a new event that I'm hosting and running called Comedians Talk Over Movies, where it does just what it sounds like. It's going to be me and other comedians talking over movies. The first one is me and Cameron, and our friend Jenna Owen from Freudian Nip has been on this podcast talking over the movie Twilight. It's going to be so fun. I cannot wait to do it. I'm so excited to be hosting this event. It is at the Golden Age Cinema, Friday, August 10th. You can buy tickets at ourgoldenage.com.au, and the tickets are in the show notes right now, so head on over.
Hey, babies. Before we start the show, I just wanted to quickly say I'm doing a one-off encore performance of my stand-up show, Chilled Out, Fired Up, in Sydney on the 20th of August. That's the show that I was touring around earlier in the year. I'm doing one more show of it at the Enmore Theatre Comedy Club because I'm recording a comedy album. And I would love you to come because I goddamn love comedy albums. And most important ingredient of a comedy album is the fucking audience, which would be you. You can Google it or it's in the show notes right now. So you can just look at it on your phone that you're holding and use the promo code YEAHBABY to get cheaper tickets for you. So that's YEAHBABY, all one word, cheaper tickets. Love you to come. Bye-bye.
It's Mike Check, the podcast by Mike Myers.
Woo, 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 woo. And hola, horny babies, and welcome to Mike Check, the only podcast in known existence to go through the films of Mike Myers and also to go through the films of SNL and its notable alumni. I am Cameron James, and I'm sitting across my hermano, Alexei Toliopoulos. How are you?
Buongiorno, Cameron James.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
What accent's this?
It's generic foreign accent.
Okay, I'm obsessed with foreign accents.
It slips around Ireland, slips around the Mediterranean, slips around the Caribbean. It's everywhere, yeah. Darling.
You're slipping and sliding all over that globe.
Oh,
there,
God,
buddy.
That's me. I'm a freaking globe slider.
Did you watch the show Sliders?
Oh, no, but I ate the meal.
Well, the meal was better than the show, but the meal had no Jerry O'Connell in it, I'll tell you that.
Well, not the sliders that I ate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's some Jerry O'Connell sliders.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's made from his old fat from Stand By Me.
Great. Great stuff. Great stuff.
I love having a riff, Cameron, and you're one of the best riffers in the game.
You are trumping me at the riff right now. I feel like I'm caught in a riff tide. I'm signaling to the lifeguards on shore and they're saying, go with it. Just go
with the flow. Cameron, what flow are we going with today?
Today we're going to go with a brand new flow, bro, you know? Yeah, I've started really getting into hip-hop lately.
Yeah, you love the stuff.
Loving it. Loving it really sick. It's the coolest shit out there at the moment.
It's one of the most exciting genres of music coming out right now.
Absolutely.
Coming out of the east and west coast of the United States.
Now, which coast do you align yourself with, east or west?
I would have to go with the Beast Coast.
Where's that, down south?
That's the down south. The down south where all the dirty rappers
down
are
in the
from.
Dirty south.
Yeah, Rick Ross.
Yeah, me.
And anyone that's legit upsetting criminals.
How about Outkast? They're from the dirty south.
Yeah, Atlanta.
And they're beautiful boys. One of them is even a big boy.
Yeah.
One of them.
And the other one's a freaking Outkast.
One of them is goddamn ice cold, that guy. Yeah, man, I love rap. But more than rap, I love comedy.
Yeah.
Obsessed with this stuff.
I mean, it's funny. It's sexy. It's definitely cool as well.
It certainly is. We've just wrapped up a 3-episode arc on Chevy.
Uh-huh.
And last week, we had a special episode, which you took care of yourself.
I took care of it.
Like Sopranos style, you took care of it.
I TCOB. I took care of business.
And also MYOB. Can you mind yours?
Okay.
Mind your own beeswax. but we're about to start a new 3-episode arc or so right now. A brand new SNL alum. This guy burst right out of the gates at a young age and became an international global superstar, the likes of which had never been seen.
I think this might be the most notable alumni.
Yeah, probably. Definitely. Well, I mean, there's probably been people in recent years that have come close or maybe have eclipsed his star in many ways.
Eclipse is something I can't stand.
How about Will Ferrell?
I would say Will Ferrell. I don't think he has eclipsed him. I think there's no one quite like the guy we're talking about for the next 3 episodes, Mr. Eddie Murphy.
Mr. Edward Murphy.
Of course, the owner and proprietor of the Murphy Group.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
This isn't going to be a brand new podcast. It's called Murphy's Floor. Mm-hmm. We're going to be looking through the films of Eddie Murphy, trying to figure out where he went wrong.
Yeah, and where he went right.
Yeah, most of the time we're going to be talking about where he went right, because right now we are in the glory days of Eddie Murphy.
So we're going to be digging into his early days, the 80s, where he came out like a freaking bat out of hell.
Oh, I love that expression.
It's just such it's a fascinating expression, because bats are not known for dwelling in the underground.
Let me tell you something about bats. When I think of bats and their locations, I think of trees.
Yeah.
I think of Africa. Deepest, darkest Africa. I think
like the Phantom.
I think of Jumanji.
Jumanji.
Yeah. I think of bats in Jumanji leaving their guano all over the ground.
Guano. Love the stuff.
Can't get enough of this stuff.
Yeah, their bats are fascinating creatures. And to imagine,
so imagine
a bat
one
flapping,
actually down there in hell.
For a bat flapping out of hell, that's quite the image.
Because I think, first of all, was that bat sent to hell for being bad on Earth?
Was a bat like sucking on people's bloods?
Was it a vampire bat?
But to imagine, to transplant my expression, so in case people at home are going like, what does Eddie Murphy have to do with bats in hell?
Yeah.
Well, it's an allegorical thing.
Yeah.
Say SNL is hell. SNL, if you will. And Eddie Murphy is a bat flapping out of there.
Yeah, yeah. He can't wait to get out.
He's going to flap out of hell, and he's going to have quite the flap out there.
I mean, he's going up to heaven.
Probably.
He's flapping out of hell, straight up to heaven, a.k.a. Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Which is how the expression, if you will.
That's heavenward. And that's how the expression finishes. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
Flapping out like a bat out of hell on its way up to heaven.
Yeah, that's the expression.
That people don't know that. It's an old Irish thing.
You know a lot of allegories.
I'm one of the most allegorical guys since Homer. Simpson, that is. One of my favorite comedians.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with Homer Simpson. I'm obsessed with allegories. But More importantly,
you're obsessed with Al Gore.
Obsessed with Al Gore. I don't believe any of the things he said necessarily.
He's undeniably funny.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
I don't believe in global warming. What do you think about
it? I'm a globe slider, so of course I believe in it.
You believe in it.
It's easier to slide around when it's wet out there.
Yeah. For me, it's dry. And I'm not just talking about the bedroom. Although my bedroom is notoriously dry.
Cameron is from a dead bedroom.
Yeah. What does that mean?
It means that the bedroom has no life in it at the moment.
That's true. I've been praying and begging for some action in there, but it's just not to be. It's not to be. I can't wait to get one a little bit late.
Like a fap out of hell.
Yeah.
That's Cameron.
Yeah. That's another one of your famous allegories.
Mm-hmm.
Before we dive into Murphy's Floor, I believe we need to check in on one of our most famous and hilarious segments.
Yeah.
I'm, of course, talking about Breckenmeyer News.
Now, Cameron correctly said Breaking Myers News.
No, I correctly said Breckenmeyer News.
Okay.
I prepared for Breckenmeyer News.
So, Breckenmeyer, if you're not familiar with Breckenmeyer, he's a wonderful actor from stuff like, I think he's in Scream 2?
Nope.
Scream 3?
None of the Screams.
He's not Jamie Kennedy?
He's not Jamie Kennedy. Okay, he's from you know him from Clueless.
You know him from Clueless. You know him from 54.
Road Trip. You know him from Robot Chicken and all the Robot Chook properties.
You know him from Rats Race.
You know him from Rats Race Big Time with John Lovitz. One of the best dudes.
That's one of my favorite movies. Rats Race Big Time with John Lovitz. It's one of the best movies of all time.
Okay, so Breckenmeyer News. What's this cunt been up to? Let's check it out.
Checking on Brecken.
Checking on Brecken right now. Turns out Ryan Philippe, or Philippe, how do you say it?
I say Felipe.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Ryan, I'm going to go with Philippe. Ryan Philippe and Breckenmeyer went out for dinner in New York City.
Wow, 54 reunion.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Wow. If only Mike was there trying to get everyone to suck them off. It'll be a real 54 reunion.
That would be really cool. Oh, no, sorry. They went out in West Hollywood, California.
Okay, we hope.
For a wonderful, wonderful dinner. Ryan kept it casual in a white t-shirt, light gray button-up, black jacket, and dark red high-top sneakers.
Well, I can't see a photo of this, but that's quite the look. I'm going to give it a 2.
Wait till you get to the accessories. He accessorized with a black baseball cap and black-rimmed glasses.
Wow.
Doesn't say what Breckenmeyer wore.
Is there a photo of him?
Yeah, it's a photo of him.
Describe it.
He's wearing... Okay, I'll do my best to describe what he's wearing. He's wearing a bottle green-colored linen shirt.
Wow, beautiful.
With a white V-neck undershirt underneath it, peeking through the
V-neck
top.
Is a little old school, but so is Brecken. I'll give him the pass.
And what looks to be a black leather jacket, perhaps, over the top.
Oh, okay. And what color pants?
No pants in this photo.
Wait a second.
No pants.
Wait.
Yeah. Is that notable?
That's what you should have led with. Breckenmeyer's dick nude?
I'm having a good old look at his hog and let me review this hog. I mean, it's thick at the base, where it should be.
It's made out of plasticine, like Robot Chicken?
It tapers off at the end.
Okay.
It's actually looks like a witch's hat. He's got a little witch's hat situation going on down there. If he laid on the street and poked that thing right up in the sky,
he'd stop traffic. Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is cool stuff. So it's great to know that he's got a beautiful penis and and that it's conical in shape, as God intended.
And it's great that he still made it for Ryan Philippa, his co-star, alongside Mike Myers and Selma Hayek in 54.
Speaking of Mike Myers, let's move on to Breaking Myers News.
We've got a couple of Breaking Mike Myers news stories. One of them, Mike Myers' cameo in Bohemian Rhapsody, is exactly what you'd expect it to be. He, of course, is playing EMI executive Ray Foster.
Okay, that's not exactly what I would have expected it to be.
I was expecting Austin Powers or something.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
When I hear Mike Myers, that's the first thing that comes to mind.
It's like, wow, exactly what I expected to be. They're putting Shrek in a live-action movie, finally. Okay, I expect it.
He's playing some freaking executive? Okay.
That's not part of his MO, his modus operandi. He doesn't play execs. He's not known for playing execs. The guy has never played a freaking exec in his life.
He's not a suit. Okay, he's not a square. He's one of the freaks. He's one of the outcasts. He's
exactly.
One of the comedy demons. Blessed be. He rattles around the globe and he slops and slides all over that globe.
The closest he's ever played to playing a suit is freaking Dr. Evil, and the guy doesn't even wear a suit. He wears a tunic of some kind.
He lives in a freaking volcano.
Shaped like his head.
Shaped like Breckenmeyer's dick.
Conical shapes. With an imprint of Mike Myers' head in it.
Okay, well, that's all right. Any other Breaking Myers news?
No, that's it. Gong show's happening. That's as well. We have not watched them. We were going to watch the premiere. We didn't do it.
We're just going to binge them all in one go. We've decided.
We're going to do a GoFundMe for you guys to let us watch the Gong show live in one recording.
I think that would be a wild and crazy idea. Like Steve Martin style.
A couple of wild and crazy guys.
Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd style.
Wow.
If we watched all of them in one go and then did a live podcast for the finale.
Yeah.
Would that be funny?
No. Rather not. Rather just do it. Rather just do it. I don't want to do any planning around it. I just want to do it.
No, I reckon we still
I don't
like
want to plan around the
because
Gong show.
Because then we get to celebrate the winners, and that's the main thing.
The winners of the Gong show.
Yeah, dude.
Honestly, I couldn't give a fuck about the winners of the Gong show. They win like $40.
I care. I want that snake guy back.
No, I don't want the snake guy back.
He does come back, by the way.
I know.
I saw the teaser.
I saw the teaser too.
I have some Breaking Myers news.
Uh-huh.
I met someone who has met Mike Myers.
Wait a second. Whom?
You.
I didn't meet Mike Myers.
You met someone who...
Met someone who met Mike Myers.
So I've met someone who has met someone who's met Mike Myers.
Yeah.
What was that like meeting someone who has met Mike Myers?
It was...
Patrick Bristow from the last episode
of Mike Check. It was one of the most fascinating experiences of my entire life.
Now, first of all, compliment alert. Great podcast, man.
Thank you so much.
You did very well. The questions were great. Mm-hmm. You held your own. Hearing you riff with that guy, I thought, okay... This guy could be in the movies.
I could have been in the picture.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I was genuinely very nervous.
Really?
And obviously, I've met famous people before in my life. I've met people.
Name them.
Met George Clooney, met Brad Pitt, Topher Grace, all the cast of Ocean's 11. I met them all. They robbed my house.
What the fuck?
They were making Ocean's 14. It didn't get released.
It never came out.
It was directed by Johnny Knoxville. It was a Jackass vid where the cast of Ocean's robbed my house.
Oh my God, dude. I would vote funny on that shit.
Oh God. It was not funny, I'll tell you.
Honestly, would you vote die?
I would vote die. Those guys betrayed me. I'm a fan of them. They betrayed me.
So Topher Grace joined the crew in this new one? About freaking time.
I know. I mean, I was like, I said, this does suck for me. I acknowledge that, but I also want to acknowledge that it's wonderful that Topher Grace has become a full-fledged member of the crew.
Cool. Maybe was he replacing Casey Affleck?
Casey Affleck out, Topher Grace in, Bernie Mac out. Sadly, they couldn't help it.
Who got in?
They put Andy Garcia in. They're like, we're going to keep it in the family, get Andy Garcia. Yeah, so I did meet Andy Garcia as well, which is
fabulous. Love him. He's a hottie in that new movie with Diane
Book Club, baby. Honestly, that should be the news. I just got invited to the book club media screening. I'm so excited to go.
I saw a Vulture article the other day that was like, prepare for the summer of your thirst for Andy Garcia.
Yeah.
There's talk out there about him being a hunk again.
Was in Mamma Mia. Here we go again.
Yeah, Mamma Mia and shit. That's awesome.
Anyway, so I met...
You met Patrick Bristow, who's not in Mamma Mia.
He's not in Mamma Mia. Book Club. But he's been in so many other movies that you love. And that was what kind of made me like genuinely nervous and a bit starstruck.
Mm.
Was because, it was like, you know, in working in comedy, you get to meet a lot of people that you idolize for your whole life. But this was just like... This was like almost magic to go like, this is someone that I've seen their face in everything that I've ever loved.
Yeah.
Like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah.
Seinfeld.
The Wigmaster from Seinfeld.
Exactly. We talked about that
for a
second.
Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah. So it was just exciting. And it was just... And I was nervous because you weren't there as well. Mm. So sorry, man. That's okay. You had to do your thing. I had to do my thing.
I was shitting in a portaloo. in Byron Bay.
Yeah. But I think it went well. And I was very excited by it.
Mm. Well, you did a great job. I thought it was a very good interview. I loved every second of it.
Uh-huh.
I listened to it at the gym.
Wow. So you're working out.
I was sweating and I was listening to your voice.
Toning up those glutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Good job. I particularly liked how you talked about his entire career. I was really worried. I was like, God, I really hope this guy just doesn't think we've got him on just to talk about Mike Myers. But his whole career is fascinating. So it was cool to hear all that. And also, he was more than willing to talk about his experiences on those two movies, which was great.
I think he was excited to talk about them because they would have been like genuine, like fun highlights of a career.
Yeah, totally.
Because it was creative for him. It was working with Mike, who it seemed like he had a lot of love for.
The Axe Murderer stories were my favorite ones, to be honest. He got a lot of free reign with that character and then none of it really made the cut for time. But that
he
was
just
cool.
He knew that. He was just like, I can have fun with it. So that was exciting.
It was really cool.
Thanks, man. It was really cool to do.
And you know, I had my own shit going on as well. I was freezing cold in a tent. I didn't shit for 2 days and then I did a really big one on the third.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah. I was at Splendor in the Grass, by the way, for anyone listening, doing comedy. I actually met some horny babies
doing
there.
Doing comedy, doing shits.
Doing comedy, doing shits, doing acid.
Wow.
I had a great time.
You did acid?
Yeah.
Dude. Is that why your shit turned weird?
Maybe. I guess we'll never know. And speaking of shit turning weird, let's talk about Eddie Murphy and his career.
Yeah. So this is exciting because we've done one episode already about Murphy's Floor. We talked about his best of SNL DVD.
Yeah.
Which is pretty stellar.
It's pretty stellar. It's pretty phenomenal. He's clearly a talent.
Mm.
But now we are getting to the point where he bursts out of the TV like a bat out of hell and flies onto the silver screen.
Which is heaven.
Yeah. TV is hell. Movies is heaven.
Movies is heaven. Which is what I want on my gravestone when I die. Movies is heaven.
And today we're going to be talking about 48 Hours. Let's dive the frick into it.
They couldn't like each other less. They couldn't need each other more.
You want to bet?
And if they can get off each other's case.
Look at you. You got a $500 suit on. You're still a lowlife.
Yeah, but I look good.
They just might solve this one.
Being a cop is a hard job, Jack.
Nick Nolte, Eddie Murphy.
We ain't brothers, we ain't partners, and we ain't friends. Now, if Dan gets away with my money, you're going to be sorry you ever met me.
I'm already sorry.
48 Hours.
48 Hours, 1982, directed by Walter Hill. One cop, one con, no mercy.
Wow.
A hard-nosed cop reluctantly teams up with a wise, kraken criminal temporarily paroled to him in order to track down a killer. 48 Hours stars Nick Nolte and young Edward Murphy.
Oh.
This is the first time you've seen this movie.
I'd never seen this movie before in my gosh dang life.
Yeah.
What an absolute treat it was to see. Because it's, as someone who, like me, who's a film historian and a comedy historian,
sure,
first and foremost in my life, then third, bat out of hell. Those are how I'd categorize myself. It was fascinating to see because this pretty much is the first like genuine buddy cop film where two disparate partners are put together to solve one mission, really. And I think the contrast between Nick Nolte as like this fucking disgusting but hard-nosed grubby cop and Eddie Murphy as this like beautiful con man who has like the, or like just a convict, really. I didn't even, he's just like, he's just got this sass and this sweetness and this charm about him that is astounding in this film. And for him to have been only 21 years of age and to give a performance of this quality, this level of humor, this level of naturalism and nuance at that young of an age is just, it astounded me, it floored me.
Let's talk about his age here now. 21 years old, what were you doing when you were 21 years old?
21 years old, I was working in a bridal shop in Flushing, Queens.
Hang on, really?
No. I was working as a production assistant at the Disney Channel.
Really?
That was what I was doing when I was 21 years old.
Wow. Who'd you meet? Any stylists?
I met a friend of yours, Marty Smiley, was working.
Oh, really?
Was a host there at the time that I worked
of
with.
Of course, Marty Smiley from The Feed and Channel V and from Our Lives.
Yes, a friend of ours. I worked with him there.
So you were just running around set.
Yeah.
Getting coffees for people.
Getting coffees, painting stuff.
Clapping
the
clapper sometimes.
No, I didn't even do that.
You never touch the clapper.
I hate the clapper. I hate to go near the clapper.
Are you scared of the clapper?
I'm afraid of the slate. I'm afraid of the slate. It scares me.
Yeah. Are you scared you're going to get your fingers caught in there?
Oh, yeah. I try to put my tongue in it every time. I can't help it. I sort of feel it snap on my tongue. What were you doing when you were 21?
21, I would have been still living in Newcastle, New South Wales, the glory state. God's country. I would have been playing music in bands, and what would I have been doing for work? I think I had a job at, you had a way more of a show busy job than me. I had a job just as a bartender at a racetrack.
Wow. And no, that's the real showbiz.
Yeah, the horses.
Yeah.
It was the bar that I worked in was right on the finish line. So I got to watch those horses get whipped and rode all the way to the finish line, and it made me detest the sport of horse racing.
It sounds like it really shaped your entire life and everything you're interested in these days in weird ways.
Made me freaking hate horse racing so much. And it's rich people.
I think what would make this better is if I replaced every horse out there.
Yeah, I used to say that. I'd be like, I should be the one running around that track. All eyes on me.
Yeah.
And then I win and I freaking treat myself to a fresh bale of hay.
Yeah. And all the mares that one could dream about.
Oh, I'd love a mare. Is a mare... a mare's the women horses?
I think so.
Awesome. What's a man horse called?
A horse or a stallion?
Stallion.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Love that shit.
The Newcastle Stallion.
Well, Eddie Murphy at 21 years old was making a Hollywood feature film.
And he was quite a stallion.
And becoming a big stallion bursting out of the friggin' TV world.
Yeah.
It's wild to me that he's 21. Because I think we've known Eddie Murphy for our whole lives. When we were kids, we had his face in on our friggin' screens.
Yeah.
Dr. Doolittle and the Nutty Professor and stuff like that.
Daddy Daycare.
And when you even look at him in this, he doesn't look 21. He looks older than most 21-year-olds are. He looks like a grown-ass man.
Yeah.
He has the presence of a grown-ass man.
The confidence.
When I was 21, there's no way I could have had anywhere near as much.
I didn't even speak out loud beyond a whisper until I was 23 years of age. I did not. I was a whisperer until then. I thought, better not be heard.
Wow.
Better lurk in the background.
Well, thank goodness no one told Eddie that, or we might not have this guy.
Exactly.
It's crazy to me. He was 19 when he got on SNL,
which
we've already talked about in the past. 21 when this came out. And as we've also already talked about, this movie came out while he was still a cast member.
Yeah.
And it was a huge hit, so much so that he ended up hosting SNL while he was still a cast member on SNL.
And that was because Nick Nolte was to be the host on that night, who is the other star of this film, the other lead. He tragically got sick.
Allegedly.
Sadly, Nick Nolte was sick.
Can you imagine Nick Nolte on SNL?
No, I don't want to. It'd be so scary to see that fucking live.
I can't imagine him.
Yeah, just live from New York. It's Saturday night.
You know, that's not cool. He's like one of the scariest guys in the world.
Funny.
No.
He's not funny. Can I
say
that?
Nick Nolte's not a funny guy.
He's not funny.
Mm.
He's... watching this movie, I thought... You don't
more cowbell. Play more. Put more cowbell on that song.
He's not funny. He's got the scariest voice.
He's got the scariest voice. His physicality is crazy.
He looks like if someone melted Lurch from the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And then chucked a little bit more hair at him.
He's not even, I don't know how to describe this freaking guy. Like when you see buddy cop movies now, usually there's the funny one, right? But then the other guy is like a little bit funny.
Yeah. He's a straight man.
Like you got, like the straight man at least gets a few freaking laughs in there.
I mean, he has some funny
lines. He has some fun shit going on.
But
this movie, Nick Nolte is in a drama.
Yeah, he has some funny
lines.
What
does he say?
I don't think I laughed.
No,
but he just like has, he punches people and looks awesome. Because he's like a street fighter in this movie.
Yeah.
Nick Nolte can only play down and out.
Yeah, true.
Nick Nolte's headshot is his mugshot.
I think...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, maybe this role I could picture going to, say, a Kurt Russell or a Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
That's the sort of vibe that I would, if I were casting this movie.
Yeah.
Not Nick Nolte. I don't like him.
You don't like Nick Nolte?
No,
I did like him in this.
No, I don't like
him. I had never seen this movie before. You'd seen it at least once or twice before.
I've seen it once, yeah.
I genuinely loved this film. I had so much fun with it, but it was mainly seeing Eddie Murphy.
I think that's it.
I liked it even before he came into it because the movie is a very hard, dirty, gritty kind of crime movie. It's a very grimy movie, very violent, kind of like your classic. I mean, it's a Walter Hill film. Walter Hill did The Warriors, a bunch of stuff like that.
It's like an Eastwood, a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah. So it's starting out in that kind of Dirty Harry world. We're seeing a chain gang out on the road getting whatever they do, chain gang, build the roads.
Break rocks?
I have no idea what a chain gang does.
Yeah, hey, I had a job for a bunch of years. It was breaking rocks. Can I put that on my freaking CV,
on
please?
On my CV, please? Yeah.
I'm applying for a job at JB Hi-Fi. What's your previous experience? I used to smash up rocks.
I had a little hammer. They were bust rocks on the other side of the road. I was chained to other blokes who had done naughty things.
I'm not going to say where this took place, but I think you can freaking tell.
And James Remar plays one of those guys who is one of those great character actors that, of course, is in this film.
Yeah, of course. And every character actor is in this movie.
He gets busted out by another character actor who I can't remember, and then they shoot up all the freaking guards and stuff.
Yeah, so cool.
It's a great opening scene. It fills it with a lot of tension and starts the action of this film
Made me jealous that I was never on a chain gang.
You would have loved to be in the hot sun with all your mates.
Just that camaraderie
that you build
up. Together.
You've got a common enemy, the man.
The man and the guy, and he walks along and he gives you a bit of water out of a tin cup that he's scooping in a little barrel, and you know, maybe I crack wires at him or something, and
you got to eat 1,000 eggs.
He hits me with the butt of his gun. Yeah. I have to eat 1,000 eggs.
Eat a freaking 1,000 eggs, man.
He puts me in shoe.
Yeah.
Solitary.
Yeah,
and,
in the shoe.
Yeah, and I'm like, God damn it, I got to go to shoe. But I like it there.
It's fun. I love to be alone with my thoughts.
Yeah, and you
it's
look
the safest
cool.
place for me sometimes.
When I go to prison, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find the biggest guy there.
Yeah, and?
I'm going to walk right up to him. And I'm going to suck his dick.
I'm going to go in the quadrangle, in the giant oval area, the common area. Just walk up to him, waltz up to him. Hey, mister. Zip.
Zip. Slurp. And then everyone will know that I'm everyone's bitch.
And you get protected.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's like, finally.
Finally, some freaking protection in my life. Someone looking after me. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the beginning of the movie. Then
the beginning of the movie is Cameron James sucking on a giant guy's knob.
And then those two dudes, I honestly can't remember the fucking setup to this movie, because I think the same experience I had this time as I did the first time watching it is, I was just waiting for Eddie Murphy to be on screen. So those first 23, 24 minutes, I'm like, very hazy on what the setup of this even
the
is.
The plot is not that intense. It's basically just like there are two creams out that are dangerous.
Yeah.
They're ready to kill.
Yeah.
And they have no scruples whatsoever, one might say. These criminals have no scruples.
Totally.
They are scrupulous criminals. And so Nick Nolte is assigned their thing. He kills their... They kill his partner. They kill his... they kill the other people that came in with him. And he's a sole survivor, really.
Right.
From trying to bust
these... Did Jonathan Banks die?
Yeah.
He gets shot. That sucks, dude.
Tragically, we did lose Jonathan Banks.
That sucks. He's so good.
So then he goes... then he has to find someone who was once... cellmates with someone that knew these people.
Right.
And that
right,
is how we are introduced to Eddie Murphy.
So he goes to jail and meets former cellmate of these crims, Eddie Murphy, aka Reggie Hammond. And I read that the character's name was originally not Reggie Hammond. It was Willie Bugs.
Yep. And Eddie Murphy said that's too much of a stereotypical black name.
It's too black.
And so, he changed it.
So I'm changing it to Reggie Hammond, which is also a very black name.
Yep.
But very cool name.
Yeah. One of my favorite African-American comedians, Daryl Hammond, of course.
And Reggie gets introduced in a way that I've opined on this a little bit before. I've not opined on this before. He gets introduced in a way that I think is typical of how a comedy star becomes a comedy star, which is... a musical introduction.
Mm, yeah.
We meet Reggie sitting in the jail cell with his headphones on, singing along really loudly and out of key to Roxanne by the Police.
Yeah.
And allegedly, according to stories about test screenings for this movie and stuff, audiences went freaking crazy.
They would have been
laughing.
From
the second that he was busting out with that freaking Roxanne, they were like, this guy's a star. And it's the same thing happens to all sorts of people. Tom Cruise became a star when he slid along in his undies.
One of the most famous comedians, Thomas Cruise Mappa.
Yeah, another...
so famous.
Another beautifully famous comedian. Oh, this guy actually is. It's not ironic. Mm-hmm. Jack Black's introduction in High Fidelity. Yeah, it's all that shit, man. Yeah. This is cool. He gets introduced. People love it. Then he starts swearing straight away. He's calling Nick Nolte honky and shit like that. Audiences are going wild for this shit. They can't believe it. Here's a young African-American man calling a white dude a honky, swearing in his face.
It's the dream come true.
A star is born.
Yeah.
He looks cool. He's wearing a suit.
And he's just... honestly, he is astounding in this movie.
Yeah.
Just even not with his age. Even if you don't consider this guy's only 21 years of age... he is astounding in this movie. Because you think about Eddie Murphy at this time, and he is such a modern comedian. Like, you look at his career, it is a career that has more... It is shaped... his early years are more shaped like what someone would be like doing today. Not someone in the early 1980s. Hmm. Because at, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, he's doing stand-up. He's also doing sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
His sketch and stand-up are both very, very modern. And apart from homophobia and stuff that kind of colors it, which was more common back then and is not common now at all. And it is, you know, obviously...
no one is homophobic now.
Well, you know,
in 2018.
It wouldn't be on TV. It wouldn't be... someone like that probably couldn't become a mainstream beloved star like he was.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think... that would be the only mark that you would really put against him, because otherwise his sketch and stand-up is so vibrant
world-class
and modern and nuanced with political and social commentary as well, for the way that is astounding for someone young. And, you know, we don't see in that era, besides maybe like someone like Steve Martin, you don't see anyone that is the top of the game on all of those fronts.
That's true.
Comedy and stand-up is like... you go, you're only a stand-up, you don't do sketch, or you're only a sketch comedian or comedy actor, and then maybe you get into the movies. But he did it all before he got into the movies.
That's true. He's world-class. There's a famous quote from Chris Rock who says, in the same year he saw Eddie Murphy at an arena tour and Michael Jackson on an arena tour, and Eddie was better.
Yeah.
That's his quote.
Well, I mean, he is the best. I just don't think there's anyone like him in the world. Like, you know, we obviously this podcast has been dedicated to Mike Myers for so long, and Mike Myers is always going to be my number one guy outside out of SNL.
We love Mike Myers.
He's the best. He's so funny. But Eddie Murphy is beyond that. He's just one of the great performers, like Michael Jackson, like Elvis Presley, like Frank Sinatra.
Can
like,
I say
he
something?
He's in that canon of great
Can
performers.
Can I throw a name at you?
Yeah.
And feel free to pick this name up and put it in your pocket.
Uh-huh.
Childish Gambino.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as that. Because you look at Childish Gambino, you look at Donald Glover.
Yeah.
Because same thing. Stand-up, sketch, bring it together, music.
The guy does music. Eddie Murphy's music.
Party all the time.
Party all the time. Maybe not as good, but still but pretty still good.
Great voice.
Pretty good voice.
Yeah.
He sings and he stand-up all the time.
And for me, watching this movie, it's like you're seeing the complete performer.
Yeah.
Because we know him from all these other things, even before. Like, you know, I had that experience watching all his other films. But to see his first film for the first time and seeing this performance that is so rightfully a star-making performance. Because you're seeing him do all of these things and then add naturalism over the top of it, where he doesn't seem like he's like a caricature in the film for a second. He feels real and natural in the film the whole time. It blew my fucking dick into the dirt. I picked it up, fed it to Cameron because it was so good.
I had to eat 1,000 of them. I was working on the chain gang.
Eat 1,000 boiled dicks, okay?
So
there's that. Can we talk about that one scene?
Which one?
The country. The country in Western.
Now that's the scene that has gone down in history as being the scene that made him famous.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Ebert, in fact, in his review for 48 Hours, says this is the exact moment that Eddie Murphy became a star.
Yep.
Eddie has opined on it before.
Yep.
Do you know what he says about it?
What
he says that it worked because this is the first time potentially in history, and he's including exploitation movies here, where a black character completely enters a white world and takes charge over that world. And I think he said, you know, in exploitation films, it was always like they'd come up against the man, but it would always be in the Bronx or, in Harlem or something like that. But this is entering a southern bar as a black guy and just fucking owning the fucking place.
Yeah.
You can imagine if you were, you know, a young person in the 80s watching this and you were African American, you'd be like, holy shit, this guy's the coolest dude.
You'd feel empowered by it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the whole scene basically is they have to go to a bar to question people. It's a country and Western style bar.
Yeah, they sing both kinds. Country and Western.
Country and Western, basically. And everyone's a freaking hick. Everyone's a hillbilly, a redneck in the bar. And then Eddie Murphy is challenged by Nick Nolte to question the bartender and to question people.
Yeah.
But Eddie Murphy's not a cop in this film.
He's a convict.
He's a convict. He's someone that is on parole for 48 hours to help capture these criminals and solve this.
The titular 48 crime. Hours.
The 48 hours is about him.
The clock's ticking, dude.
The clock is ticking down, and he's got a few things that he needs to do. He needs to TCOB, and he needs to
get laid. Some.
He's horny. He needs to get laid. He's horny. This is one of the hornier non-Mike Myers vehicles that we've talked about as well.
Definitely.
So he's in this bar. He uses Nick Nolte's
badge,
and he's putting his hand over the picture and stuff, and just seeing him take control of this bar and the way he's. Like, just the way he's doing it. Because, Cameron, you're an actor. You've had a lot of experience acting and doing big scenes where you would have had to take control of the scene with a lot of extras and a lot of players. I don't even think you could do this now at your age the way that he did it at 21.
It's
you know what
so
I mean?
Confident.
Like, can you imagine like having to bring it, that real confidence?
Oh, for me, I watch it, I'm like, that looks like a lot of fun. Like, as someone who likes to do that stuff, I'm like, man, that looks like... I don't know if I'd be able to do it as well as Eddie Murphy, obviously, but I do watch it and go, fucking hell, I would love to, like, pick up a glass and smash it against a wall, grab some extra by the hair and slam them into a pole. All that shit looks like so much fun.
Yeah.
To be 21 and doing that, you'd be like, man, this is the... I got the best job.
This I know, cool. But just it feels real, right? Like
it's very real.
As an actor, can you talk me through how you see that process of someone taking command of a scene that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by it from watching a comedy actor do this, you know, because I can see any dramatic, like Nick Nolte doing it makes sense because physically the guy's huge.
Yeah.
But Eddie Murphy's a smaller guy. He's a younger guy. He's a bit baby-faced. So I'm like, how did he... I was watching going, how did he have so much like physical presence in this scene?
And he does.
And he does. I don't know how the fuck real actors do it, but I guess I read a little bit about that scene. And Eddie Murphy had an acting coach on this movie who taught him a few little tricks. And here's my scoop on acting.
Uh-huh.
Acting is all tricks.
Really?
It's all lies.
I've heard acting is reacting.
That's another one that I've heard too, for sure. Acting is listening.
Okay. Definitely. That sounds shit. Acting a lot of time is talking.
Yeah. Who the fuck wants to listen?
I mean, listening is what you guys are doing, listening to this podcast.
Listening sucks.
If you think you're fucking acting right now because you're listening, baby, let me tell you this, you ain't.
If you're sitting on a bus right now and you're listening and you're thinking, I'm acting in a feature film right now, you're sitting on a freaking bus.
Honey, get off at the freaking... nearest
freaking cuckoo farm.
Exactly. One needs to fly into the cuckoo's nest if I were you guys and you think you're freaking acting in a feature film right now. Because you're not, honey, let me tell you.
When we were making our thing...
When
we were making our project recently, Becky and I were talking the whole time about how acting is just counting in your head and like...
For the next real line to be.
Yeah, and thinking about things that like you're not actually feeling. Like when you have to express sadness in your face, you're like, oh, okay, what's... I'll just think about something that will make my face look sad, even though I'm not sad.
Yeah.
I remember reading that James Gandolfini used to keep thumbtacks in his shoes. So whenever he needed to get really angry and upset as Tony Soprano, he would just let them dig into balls of his feet.
Oh my God, my anus just puckered. My
but hearing
God.
That shit, you're like, oh, okay, acting is literally just doing whatever it takes to make you look
good
on camera.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sopranos, here's a little connection for you.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy's acting coach on this movie was an actor called David Proval.
Oh my God, David Proval.
Richie Aprile.
From Sopranos. From many movies such as Mean Streets. And also he played the Italian scary father in Everybody Loves Raymond of Robert's girlfriend.
He did too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love him. I love Richie Aprile. So apparently the advice. No,
he's Richie.
Yeah, he was Richie.
I'll see him with Jackie.
God, no. Another one.
Yeah.
Oh, those two. So apparently the advice that David Proval gave him was to imagine that you are Bruce Lee. So Eddie Murphy has given interviews saying, whenever you see me being angry and intense and tough in this movie, I'm doing an impression of Bruce Lee.
Wow.
So he approached it like a comedy actor.
Yeah.
He just approached it as if he was doing an impression of somebody.
Wow.
Very cool. Very cool stuff.
It struck me as a unique scene because it also reminded me of In the Heat of the Night. You know, the scene with Sidney Poitier, They Call Me Mr. Tibbs. It reminded me of that, where he's taking charge in a place where he is totally an outsider amongst Hicks. And it had notes of that in it. But then it was just like something else because it was funny and he was intimidating. And there was moments where he had like to himself where he was like, had to like take that second and breathe and exhale and be like, fuck, what am I doing? And it was just like, that was just, it, to me, was astounding acting.
It's a great role. It's a great scene in a great movie.
I want to do that for my monologue. Go travel back in time to high school and do that.
Instead of Alec Baldwin.
Glenn Gary Glenn Ross
monologue you did?
Yeah, it'd be great. Or just do more auditions so I got a chance to do monologues.
Which never happens, by the way. I had to go for an audition where they let me pick my own monologue.
Wow.
I picked something from Eastbound and Down.
Yeah.
You should record you doing the Alec Baldwin monologue from Glenn Gary Glenn Ross and put it up for our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, sure. I'll record it. I'll do that.
I reckon you should. That would go off.
Oh, Queen. Man. That would be so funny.
Slay. That would slay, dude.
Just put it up there. You, for $5, you can hear me read the monologue in character from Glengarry Glen Ross.
I would absolutely love that. That's great. What's another thing I was going to tell you about? Oh, I read that Eddie Murphy nearly got fired from this movie.
No way.
During production. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it, because watching it this time around, I think... when we see a comedic actor on screen, mm-hmm. someone we know is a comedy legend,
yeah.
you project comedy onto them no matter what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I remember this movie as being a lot funnier than it actually is.
Yeah.
And it's not really a comedy. There's funny bits, really. Like Eddie gets some funny bits. But it's really just a fucking cop movie.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy nearly got fired because they wanted him to be funnier. And he wasn't funny enough in this movie. And he's kind of not. I saw an interview with him on YouTube from just before it came out.
Mm.
It's with Entertainment Tonight or something like that. And he's really talking about how it's not funny.
Yeah.
In the whole interview. He's like, oh yeah, I'm not funny in this movie. Don't like come and expect to see a comedy. This is a serious movie.
Yeah.
I do action scenes in it. I get like two or three funny lines, but it's not a comedy.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were at odds a little bit, like Eddie wanted to be a dramatic actor.
I think so, because I think Eddie took himself very seriously.
You can tell.
He took himself very seriously. Like, you listen to his music, that's very sincere.
Yeah.
And you look at everything that he was doing on SNL in this era as well, and like, obviously it's super fucking funny.
Mm.
But he is not about the catchphrases, he is about exploring characters, he is about exploring... like different aspects of African American culture and African American life that is, you know, something that's very current and very modern to be exploring those things. And he was doing it like back then where everything was like, you know, I want to feed your finger to the wolverines and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And just, he's just that astounding of a performer. He is just that comedic mind and not just comedic mind, but just Eddie Murphy's an artist. You know, like he nowadays he hasn't produced much astounding art or astounding comedy, but this was his golden era. He was the golden child, baby.
It feels to me like he wanted to leave comedy behind, especially with these early movies. Because I mean, I guess this was his first feature film.
Yeah.
Then
Trading Places right after
this. He did a couple of comedies, but then.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop is another action movie that's got a little bit of funny shit in it.
Well, he's not very funny in it, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it seems like from the get-go, he wanted to establish to the world that he is not just a freaking sketch actor.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to go, hey, look, I can be in action movies. Mm. I can be a leading man. I remember also reading when Die Hard came out that Bruce Willis is really campaigning for that role because, for similar reasons, he wanted to prove... to the world that he's not just the funny guy on a sitcom.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I want to do action movies. I think I read a quote from him where he said, if you can do an action movie early in your career, then audiences will buy you doing anything.
Yeah.
He's like, that's the big one to get people over the line with. Like, to see you leading an action movie.
Yeah.
But once you've done that, people will go, oh, cool, yeah, he's an action star. But he's also funny, that's cool.
Yeah.
And he can be in horror movies, great. Awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, those are two performers where, I guess, Eddie Murphy, because most of his career is pretty broad and straight comedy, you do associate him with that. But then he's always found success when he has kind of stepped out of that a little bit as well. You look later in his career, Dreamgirls, Oscar nominated.
Mm.
This one, first film, Golden Globe nomination, Best Supporting Actor.
I kind of wish that he just did more action stuff, if I'm honest.
Go watch Tower Heist.
Maybe I will. Is that Brett Ratner?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
But it's always exciting to go back and see these early films of Eddie Murphy and these big films and these beautiful and exciting films of him and to just soak up his talent and just see this man working at the peak of his ability. And then it's not disheartening to see his output now or lack of output now, but it's more disheartening to see people not recognize his talent.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a whole generation of people that grew up knowing him only as Norbert.
Meet Dave and Norbert, you know?
Yeah, so they missed out on this shit. And I think we're going to do some of his earlier movies for this next couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the future, we are going to be diving into his later career. And I am not looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But I know it's necessary to look at the whole man.
To see this man as the artist that he is. And the good. Next week, we're going to be discussing Trading Places, which is the movie that he made right after this. Another movie directed by John Landis,
who's been the star of this podcast, apparently.
This season, because in the 80s, like we said in our first run of episodes here, no one had a run and as big an influence on what American comedy was in the 1980s over John Landis. Because even Lorne Michaels wasn't even working on SNL at the time.
Oh, yeah, he fucked off.
He fucked off, and Eddie Murphy kept it alive.
Yeah, that's right. Before we do leave, I have some news for you.
Oh, my God, I'm scared.
Have you heard that they are remaking 48 Hours?
I have heard.
Do you know who's behind this?
Yes, I'm so excited. I think that this movie, because it is a movie that is just an established genre, or a movie that established generic tropes, it's very remakeable.
Definitely very remakeable. You just take the title, you can put anything into it. You can freaking...
Exactly.
But it's allegedly being written and directed by the Safdie brothers.
Yeah, who
of
did
Good Time.
My favorite movie, Good Time. Mm-hmm. They're great New York directors that are about to blow up. And I think this and their next movie, Uncut Gems, are like kind of both in the works.
And co-written by Jared Carmichael, who's one of my favorite comedians.
I think he's perfect to play the Eddie Murphy
role. I wonder
role,
if
and
he
also
will
to
be.
Flavor
at the moment,
it.
He's just attached as a writer, but I wonder if he'd be the Eddie stand-in for
He doesn't have to be, but I think his name on this makes me really excited.
Yeah, he's
and especially
he's a, great
a comic actor and comic writer like him, and a great comedic mind, working with fucking the best director writers in the world right now. Man, that's exciting.
Yeah, that would be cool. That's one of the only times that I hear of a remake or reboot and I'm genuinely excited for it.
And
it's
if you
want
to hear
rare.
Us talk about reboots and remakes, you can head over to our other podcast, Total Reboot. We talk about reboots, remakes, and ripoffs in cinema. So maybe we'll get to talk about this movie more in depth later on and not focus so much on Eddie Murphy and talk about Walter Hill's filmmaking one day.
Maybe. God, I dream of that.
I hope so, because I think this was genuinely a very exciting movie.
I think I don't think I love this movie, but I love Eddie in this movie. Mm. And it makes me excited to watch the other ones we're going to watch coming up. So that'll be cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, what a dream, what a scream that was.
And what a team you and I make.
Yeah, let's eat some cream.
Okay, hang on a second, what are you doing?
I'm doing it prison style, baby.
Guys, thanks for joining us on another episode of Mic Check. If you like what you heard, give us 5 stars on iTunes. In your review, leave us a name, title, and concept of what you'd like our next super specific actor-based podcast to be. For example, you could have done Murphy's Floor, where we talk about the flaws of Eddie Murphy's career. And, of course, the beautiful things that he did make. Next episode is going to be Trading Places.
Yep.
Cameron, as well, on August 10th, you can see us both doing what we do best, talking about movies while they're actually playing. I've taken over hosting from our dear friends Reese Nicholson and Karen Wheatley.
Comedians talking over movies
at Golden Age Cinema. August 10th is our first one, joined by our good friend Jenna Owen. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking over Twilight.
That's going to be good. I've never seen that.
It's going to be one of the funniest movies of all time, I'm sure. But that's the first one. We're going to be talking over Twilight. You can buy tickets. They're going to be in the show notes right now. So click on over, buy tickets, come hang out with us, drink a few beers with us, watch a freaking movie with
us. Get freaking wasted. I'm going to get absolutely sloshed.
I'm going to get plastered.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with getting plastered.
I'm obsessed with plaster.
Me too.
Yeah. And Cameron, on August 20?
August 20, I'm doing an encore performance of my stand-up show, Chilled Out, Fired Up, at the Enmore Theatre, not in the main room, in a smaller room, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm recording it for a comedy album. I'd love you to come along. So you can find a link for that in the show notes or online. And if you want to get cheap tickets for being a listener to this podcast as a very special guest, use the code YEAHBABY, all one word, in the frickin' page. Or
in the page,
called.
Baby.
Yeah, and you get some cheap tickets and maybe bring a friend and be a part of Herstory on my comedy album.
And that's all in the show notes, guys. So we'll see you at all of those things and we love you.
Can I say that? I love you. We love you.
We love you, guys.
We're in love with you.
Okay, now you're acting because you're feeling emotion. So that's acting.
We are in love with you.
And now you're acting. You're in a feature film right now.
It's Mike Check. It's Mike Check. The podcast by Mike Myers. And we're clear.
Beta Pod.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.